MishCon, you're never alone.
Shalom, and welcome to the Remnant Radio Show, where we're living and learning a restoration lifestyle. This is Nitza Moshe from Remnant Remedy, and this is Preparation Skills for the Remnant Bride, Part 12, with my special guest, Suzette Robinson. And today we are going to continue starting with the topic of lotion. And if you're just joining us on this series, you can go to www.paintedtongue.org. You can download the preparation list, and there's also a PowerPoint, I believe. And let's get started, Suzette, on lotion.
Hi. Yes, as somebody who lives in a northern climate, my skin gets pretty dry. And I know probably with proper hydration, that wouldn't be an issue if our systems were all working properly. But sometimes if I'm real desperate and like my hands get dry because I do tend to wash a lot, I will even whip out my chapstick or my lip balm and use that out of my hand. And I've been known to take, you know, a lip balm that I'm not really don't think it's really good for my lips, and I'll use that as a foot cream if I have to. So there's things that you can use that for moisturizing your skin that you might not think about. Certainly oils, you know, the natural oils are better, like olive oil, almond oil, jojoba oil, and making our own is wonderful with essential oils in them. But it is nice to keep away chapped skin, and especially in like windy climates or really hot sunny climates, you want to make sure that you have something to protect exposed skin. You want to be able to coat maybe a little beeswax with some oil to be able to coat your exposed areas if necessary. You know, for some people it's a little more important than others because we just have drier skin, or their skin might be more delicate and more exposed. And we've learned to use just straight organic coconut oil as a sunscreen. And I thought it was crazy when somebody told me that, when one of the sisters told me that. I said, no way, you can't use coconut oil. Isn't that the stuff that, you know, everybody goes out to get a really super heavy tan with? We went to the beach. It's not like Florida, but I think it would work anywhere. 1 year in Michigan, and we were out all day, and we used just the organic coconut oil as sunscreen, and it worked very, very well. And I have fair skin.
Now, so, is that the refined or unrefined?
It was whatever I had in the kitchen cupboard, and I just thought it was organic, probably refined. You know, stuff I had
bought. Well, did it have a coconut smell?
Not a lot.
Okay, then it was probably the refined, and the unrefined has the smell. Okay, yeah, and it's the kind you cook with, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely. It was something out of my kitchen cupboard.
Right. All right.
And we know that's, you know, I can't say everything that you eat is safe to eat these days. But if it's safe enough to eat, it's for sure far better for your skin than the chemical. And I know there's a lot of issues, and I think they're even putting nanotechnology now in the sunscreens that are on the market today.
Yeah, and they are known and have been linked to cancer. And, of course, I never was really into them because they just burnt the snot out of my eyes. Not that I had snot in my eyes, but, you know, it just really hurt. And it made my skin all nasty. But, you know, myrrh is also good for sunscreen. And in, I think it's part 1, 2, or 3 of the Shimon series that I did, I talk about how they like to extract in the pharmaceutical industry, they like to extract certain constituents of essential oils or herbs. And, you know, and then they play it out in their advertisement that this does this, right? And so you might buy just that particular constituent as a supplement. However, or they might add it to a product. However, it does not work the same as it does when it's in the whole of all the other constituents that Yahweh made when he created those plants. And that is one of the things they do with myrrh, and I believe it's furanoid. I could have that word wrong, but I did a teaching on that. And what happens is if you extract it away from its whole, it actually will help you get a sunburn. But if you keep it in the whole with the myrrh plant or the myrrh essential oil, it will actually help protect, which, you know, kind of makes you wonder, isn't that why Yahweh provided the myrrh plant in the Middle East where it's so hot? And they could use that resin oil for the sun when they're out there in the desert. Also, I just want to share for a moment the basic principle of what I call, we have sold it, but I haven't made any new batches, but you can make your own Remnant Mama salve. And basically, this is just the principle behind it. You can take, say, 1/4 cup of coconut oil and 1/4 cup of olive oil, and then put in 1/4 cup of shredded beeswax. and melt that on a really low heat. Actually, you're really wanting to melt just the beeswax first, and then add your oil and stir it up. And then if you've ever made hard candy, you know what I'm talking about. Once you stir that up with your beeswax, take a drop out and drop it in some ice-cold water and see what the texture is like. How hard does it get? If it's not hard enough for the moisturizing lotion that you want, add more beeswax. If it is too hard, more like a chapstick or a lip balm, which you could make your own lip balm this way, then you would add more beeswax. So basically, your ratios are about the same, except you're just wanting to up or down that beeswax to get the texture, whether it's harder or lighter, for the lotion that you want. And then if you want to, when you take that out and pour it off into jars, you can add your essential oils. But add them, you know, when they're not enough to stir them in, but not hot, because you don't want to put a lot of heat on your essential oils. And that's a basic salve, and it's so less expensive than going out and buy your own. And you can use those salves to mix with oils when you're having to put them on a wound. I put my antibacterial, antiviral essential oils on my wound, and then I put them in a little bit of my salve, and then I put it on there, especially on wounds that, you know, when you go to pull the Band-Aid off, it's just going to rip, you know, and tear off the tissue, and keep it moist. And that is scriptural, actually. I need to memorize that scripture, but there's a scripture that refers to, you know, you didn't even keep shemen or oil or balm on your wounds. And if you have antibacterial and antiviral essential oils or shemen on your wounds, it helps heal them and it helps protect them from getting infected.
And there's nothing like making your first batch of homemade stuff. And I mean, and then after, but I remember the first time I made a really, truly healthy recipe of skin cream for myself. And there was nothing, it was just so exhilarating, so wonderful. And to know that when I put it on, I was not doing any harm to my body. You know, three ingredients, beeswax. Well, I didn't use the olive oil. I don't know if I didn't have any or what. I just used the coconut oil with the beeswax.
You could do either. I just like to mix them, yeah.
Yeah, and it was actually your recipe that I had called you for to help with my skin, and put some essential oil in there, the gentle healer and stuff, and it was so wonderful, and I love that cream, and it's wonderful. I know there's only a couple of ingredients in it. It's not going to hurt me, and I made it myself, and like you said, it didn't cost $1 million. If you go to the health food store or the salons,
right, you're going to pay more. You're going to pay more for the output. But the per ounce price is incredibly less expensive. And you could do that with fractionated coconut oil, or you could get the expelled pressed, you know, coconut oil. And, you know, that's basically all I use aside from, say, cucumber oil or frankincense and myrrh on my face and my body. I never buy a product at the store for moisturizing or for wounds or any kind of, I mean, it's just think how much money you would save if you quit buying those products that have harmful chemicals and use them for your family. For the men who work in the wintertime out and their hands get, you know, callous and sore or cold and dry, that's the way to go. You want your feet to be soft, put it at the bottom of your, you know, on the bottom of your feet every day. If it's real dry in the morning and at night, especially at night before you go to bed, then put on some cotton socks or some, wrap your feet with some linen, and you'd be surprised. I, for many, many years, had really hard calluses on the bottom of my feet, but since I've been using that, and if you want to, add some essential oils. But the great thing about that is olive oil and coconut oil has its own healing properties, and you don't have to add any essential oils, but you could get the added benefit of adding them. So that is something, you know, again, to consider. And, you know, you just need a basis of, you know, your coconut oil and your beeswax. That's why I say get some beeswax from, you know, you could also make candles out of it. I'm sorry. You could also make candles out of the beeswax.
Do you recommend pouring stuff into, I know with the essential oils, it needs to be, you know, light filtering or light blocking. But is there an issue with a metal container versus a glass container? Certainly we try not to do plastic, but.
To be honest with you, my last batch was sold in aluminum tins. Now, am I into aluminum? No. But the reason I did it was the cost of the aluminum tin was so inexpensive. And I'll make a confession. What I actually did was I went to the Amish store And they had these round aluminum tins of this wonderful herb seasoning, and they were 25 cents a piece. So I dumped out all the herbs and I washed up all the tins, took off the labels, and I relabeled them and poured them all with their salve. And the reason was is because, you know, the salve's expensive in one way. It's not as expensive as buying anything from the store. But so I poured them, and then that way I didn't have to pass that cost on to my customers. Now, I know that other people, and when I go to redo another batch, then I'll have to, you know, spend $2, $3, $4 on just the bottle and the packaging. And those little tiny fancy mason jars are great. And for a lot of people out there, they might have some hard plastic or little glass jars of some other product that they bought. And you can save those, clean them out, and recycle them, and also use them. But yeah, you know, it would be better to put them in glass or stainless steel. But then, of course, who has stainless steel little containers?
I was gonna,
but I have
sorry.
put them in aluminum tins. You know, I don't think that's the best, but hey, it went a long way. And women love that salve on their tummies when they're pregnant.
And that's one of the things is that if you've ever done, when I did my candles, I did Bath and Body, and I called it homemade, but I realized just how, you know, it wasn't as great and basic and natural as this, but containers and packaging are a big part of the product.
Right.
It's a big expense. So, and recycling is certainly great. You know, again, thrift stores and stuff, sometimes I get some really nice, the stainless steel, and I'm sure we'll come up to it. Sometimes you can find containers like that, not really small ones, but some larger ones for storage. But
Yes.
glass would be preferable. And recycle, think about recycling. Ladies, a lot of stuff you've bought, or if you're switching over to natural stuff, you may have some nice cosmetic containers that you can just clean out and reuse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people have those little aluminum tin lip balms, or they have the plastic ones. Some are some are glass. Yes, that's always best. But usually, one thing I look about the salve is it's not something I'm storing long term. You know, hopefully I'm going to be using a lot of it, and when someone goes to use it, you know what I'm saying? It's not like the oil's going to last forever. And again, it's also good on baby hinies, especially when you take a lavender or tea tree or something that's really soothing, and the cucumber seed oil is incredible for skin. So, yes, you're right. But I don't get too carried away with it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It just depends. If it was my own batch, yes, I would pour it in a few pieces of, you know, glass. But if I'm going to have something that I want, one in the car and one upstairs and, you know, one in the office and one to give away, yeah, I, you know, if I can find a batch of those or something I can recycle, then yeah, I will use them.
I think it's good that we're mindful to be reasonable and frugal, because those are skills that we're going to need too. You know,
Right. We don't
if
even
you
think that way anymore. You know what I mean? Like, what can we use that we've got, you know?
Yep. It's always go buy something new, new, new.
Right. All righty. We're hopefully going down the hill on this checklist, and we are starting off with insulation materials.
Yes. I think sadly a lot of or smartly, a lot of homeless people learned this, that there are more things that you can insulate with. Personal protection, your clothing is your first line of defense. Water, we know, is 3 days without water you can die, with 3 weeks without food. But without proper protection in serious inclement weather, it can be within minutes. So for insulation, if you didn't have enough warm clothing or extra blankets and stuff, you have to think about things that are available, like pine straw, newspapers. One thing to think about with your clothes or what you choose is, down is an excellent insulator, but it loses its loft and some of its insulation property when it's wet. Polyfill, the polyester stuff, unfortunately, but it will stay lofty, and wool works when wet or dry. The military predominantly uses the wool socks and wool glove inserts, or at least they did when I was in. I don't know if they're still using the wool. They probably have a lot of the new Gore-Tex type garments now, but that's one reason wool is a good classic in that sense, because it does stay insulating whether it's wet or dry.
All right. Now, does wool keep you warm if it's wet?
It maintains its insulation properties, so it's supposed to keep you, and I did use it in the military, where it will keep the, you know, it re maintains its insulation properties. So your body temperature on the inside should insulate from the heat loss going out.
Okay.
Not that if it's wet, I mean, if it's cold wet, you know, you're going to have some generation of body heat to get it warmed back up.
Right. Now, what I find frustrating is, you know, 20, 30 years ago, when I used to hike a lot, we would go on 5 or 6 mile hikes near in the LA area up the mountains to the observatories. You could go out and buy silk liners to put under your 100% wool socks. And that, you know, helped keep the wetness and wick it away from your feet when you're sweating. And I find it nearly impossible today to find 100% wool, 100% cotton socks, or even
yes.
those silk socks. It's, you know, and we're talking at outfitter places. It's just incredible to me.
I know I've been looking for 100% wool socks myself, and you can get 80%. That's about the best you can find.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me, I have not been able to find 100% wool. And that in the military, you had extra pairs of socks, and that was a very critical part of like a road march or anything like that, was to keep your feet dry so that you don't have jungle rot or, you know, what have you, athlete's foot or things develop. And it does make your feet sweat to have some really warm socks on sometimes, especially depending on what shoe you have. So it is good to have a change of socks or things that will make, like you said, the moisture wick away. And it's very hard to find the pure fabrics these days.
Right. Which leads me, when I started looking at linen and wool, I realized that that was an area of preparedness and survival skills that nobody was addressing. Because if you want to follow Torah and not mix, try walking into a yarn store and saying, I would like 100% yarn and of wool or linen. But most of them don't even carry the linen at all. And if they have the wool, they have a very limited, choice, very limited supply in the different colors or whatever. And they will just automatically say, well, you want this because the socks will last longer and they'll be mixed. And it's like, no, you don't understand. I
Right.
want wool. And if I'm going to learn to knit and do that, then I will learn to darn. And so this whole area of making our own fabric, our own yarn from scratch is a skill that, you know, some people have in some areas, but as a whole, especially for the Hebrew community, this is something that really needs to be restored, and I believe it will be part of the restoration process, because how else are we going to be 100% pure and obey the commandments and have the health benefits from it?
And a lot of things that – and we love linen. I mean, we're linen lovers for sure. But the other high-frequency fabric mentioned in Torah is wool.
That's right.
The thing is not to mix them. That was the commandment. It's not that wool is not good, because it was also used in the Torah, and it was used. I think there are certain instances where they're put in wool to heal, and most of the things were linen. The priests, the messengers, the temple. I mean, the linen is certainly through and through from Genesis to Revelation, but there are instances where it was wool that was used, and it is a natural, comes from sheep. Sheep are really Torah, very scriptural. So it's something that I think a lot of times, even those of us who have gone back to the linen, we don't think about the wool being the other high frequency fabric of scripture. And it is hard and it's expensive. I mean, if you go look at a pair of men's dress pants new in a store, they could be a couple $100 for a fine pair of wool men's dress pants. The secret is to go, a lot of people do not like the wools and the linens because of their upkeep and maintenance. And sometimes people will buy them and then discard them or donate them. And you can make your own, like you could go get, if you went to the thrift store and picked out wool pants off the rack, you could certainly get a couple of pairs of socks or some kind of thing out of there. I don't know how stretchy or how fitting they'd be, but, or make a quilt, make a patchwork quilt out of wool or something. The fabrics are out there if you can be creative. And then the skills, like you said, to learn how to make them actually, like spinning wool and, you know, having sheep and spinning wool, or learning how to knit and make your own. Certainly lost arts for the most part for most of us.
Right. And I've bought a pair of 100% wool pants for $1 at the Salvation
Yep.
Army. And you're right. People that have more money and more affluent will buy linen and wool 100%, and then they'll donate them because they're going to recycle, you know, through their next year's wardrobe. But the common person, the average person, they don't like the upkeep because, again, that's part of our society. We're a throwaway society now. We don't take the time to conserve and preserve our fabrics, And you really see that with the Amish or the Mennonite. You know, their wool pants or clothing, especially that the men wear, they keep them and they upkeep them. And, they do that. Interestingly, they usually do those really good fibers.
I've seen Amish pants. We had a carpenter once that did some work, and he had pants that looked like they had been made from three or four different pairs of pants because they had patches and stuff on them. But that's the way. I mean, that's the way our ancestors did. We didn't throw things away, and we just had a conversation. I was helping my mom with a quilt. It was a beautiful idea where her friend's husband had passed away, and they did a quilt out of his shirts. They made a patchwork quilt out of his shirts, and my son was helping, and he was observing that. And I haven't done a lot of quilting in his lifetime. I did a little bit when my other kids were younger, and he was like, "Well, are there different sizes and all that?" And I thought, "Oh my goodness, my son does not understand quilting." And we said, "Yeah, they could be any size because the where quilting came from was you didn't waste anything." And I have a baby quilt that my grandmother made me where this it's actually triangles, but they're only a couple of inches big because you saved the fabric, and if that's what you had to cut it down to make a useful piece out of it, you did that, and you put it together, and they got another life and another cycle.
Yes, and there's the Ragged Coat, I think. There's a storybook that's just really wonderful about a young girl whose father was a coal miner, and he died from the coal mines, and people made fun of her because she had this ragged, multicolored quilted coat that her mother had made for her. And the story just turns out to be a good story where she gets to tell, the kids that are making fun of her that this piece of cloth came from, your mom or your grandmother and the different people in the community because they had come together to help make this little girl's coat. And then of course, it turned around that people envied her coat. There was a story in a Country Home magazine, I think years ago, that I did a devotional from, and basically they were talking about modern day quilting. Modern day quilting is the most expensive hobby that I have found.
I know.
And it's an artwork, which is great, but you get brand new this, brand new that, and you create your theme or whatever. And there was this lady who wrote about quilting in general, and then she went into, but none of these quilts, no matter how finely they're sewn, how beautiful the fabric and the textures are, she basically went into this story that made me cry that, these quilts have no heart. And then she brings out this quilt and she goes through this thing about, like, this piece of cloth was from my baby girl that I lost when she was two, and this piece here was from my son's uniform when he went off to war, and you're just sitting there by the time she gets
Wow.
through and you're just going, oh my gosh, this quilt had heart in it because number one, they conserved everything, but each piece meant something and had value. And again, that was when we weren't in a throwaway society and things were precious. And having discovered linen and trying to understand the process of, bringing it to a flax to a fabric and having sheep, and learning to spin, not very well, mind you, but learning to spin and bring it to a fabric, I now have a whole new appreciation that, it took probably a year for the crop, whether it was your sheep or your flax. Then, it took you days and days to process that into a yarn or a string or thread for fiber, and then actually into a fabric if you were weaving into fabric. So now, when someone gives me a handmade, I don't care if it's just knitted or spun, linen item or wool, I am just like, oh my gosh, their whole heart and soul went into that, and it's worth so much more. And then of course I also know why it's so expensive when I go to the store, and people just don't have appreciation when they say, oh yes, it costs so much. But if we would look at having much less of a few things that are of such quality and worth versus lots of things that are, not really good fabrics for ourselves, I think it might change our attitude a little bit on how we deal with the clothing and fibers that we have in our lives.
You are Yahweh.
You're listening to the Remnant Radio Show with your host, Nitza Moshe. This concludes part A of Preparation Skills for the Remnant Bride. Now.